Welcome back. My name is Rohan, and this is Season 4, Episode 18 of Back to the Past, the Alternate History Podcast. So today, as Nick will describe it, and Nick was telling me earlier, this will be the last episode of the, quote, Robert Taft Trilogy. So Nick, you want to go into background?
So before we get into it, I just want to say the Taft Trilogy was basically where we talked about Robert Taft, of course, for around, what, 2 to 3 episodes now straight?
Yeah, they weren't necessarily straight, but like within the span of a month or two.
So he was a conservative, actually, throughout the 30s, 40s, and 50s, who was well-known, actually, amongst the general public and was a contender for the presidency several times between the years of 1940 to 1952, his best chance being in 1952. So in this scenario, we're going to say Eisenhower doesn't run, simply put. He just doesn't get convinced. And the liberals are going to have to, unfortunately for them at least, give over the nomination to Taft and the conservatives. And this would be in 1952, by the way. And for those who know, he does die a year later because of cancer in actual real life. But in this scenario, we're going to say he didn't. So let's just start off. He wins against Stevenson in 1952. And it depends on how you want to say closer margins, or if you want to say that margins were close, or maybe better, actually, perhaps, for all you know. So how do you want to begin this? What do you want to touch on in his first term? Or his terms, at least, as presidency, because we're going to say he won 2 terms.
Let's first of all go into foreign policy and how Taft would treat foreign policy, because Taft's view on the globe compared to Eisenhower's is significantly different.
Yeah, you're definitely right here, because I mean, Eisenhower, at least, was definitely more of a interventionist, if you know what I mean. He was definitely intervening a lot more in for example, he started the Vietnam conflict, at least for the United States. It wasn't as amped up as, say, as Kennedy or LBJ did it, but still, it was still involvement in Vietnam. There's also Korea, which he pulled us out of, which I think Robert would still do the same in this scenario. Outside of that, for example, I think we would see a relatively somewhat similar situation in foreign policy. Now, this might be surprising for some people because they usually define him as we're talking about Robert Taft here, as a isolationist, which he himself has discredited several times, as he stated in a Meet the Press interview in 1952, before the election, I don't know if it was before the convention, but it was in 1952, that he would honor any obligations in the treaties held by the United States, aka NATO in 1949 was created, so he would be obligated to that treaty and would, for example, defend Western Europe from attacks from the Soviet Union. And so, for example, there'd be no Vietnam under Robert Taft administration, because he is non-interventionist to begin with. And I don't think that he would probably refuse, France demanding for help from the United States from Eisenhower, right? And so, I mean, that's really all I have with Robert's foreign policy here. I mean, you want to add on anything?
But yeah, Nick, so I think you're correct about that. And what I wanted to say going off is, so I think honestly, the Soviet Union wouldn't take advantage of the United States and its, I guess, less interventionist policies of, for example, not getting to Vietnam. I don't think the Soviets would take that as a sign of American weakness and, start picking more fights. I don't think that would really happen. I think they would, pick the same fights that they did in our timeline as well. So,
yeah, I think you're right about that. I think one of the core tenets, at least, of non-interventionism, right, would be more so to show, I mean, what Donald Trump would say is peace through strength. And I think that he would show it here in this scenario as, I mean, Robert Taft showing it as a president, right? He would be more so peace through strength. That is, he was known, for example, to support the Navy and Air Force in terms of spending, actually, with the military, as he actually did support a good amount of Navy and Air Force spending. Furthermore, we're going to talk foreign policy, right? I think one funny thing we should mention as well is that I think we forgot to mention this as well, but his VP in this scenario, which we were actually looking up, who was Douglas MacArthur, actually, in this scenario, would be his vice president. As a result of Truman getting rid of him in the Korean War due to the disagreements over China, MacArthur would still be a relatively well-known. And luckily for Taft, Douglas MacArthur would live right through his administration, only dying 3 years later. In 1964, in our timeline, and he probably still would, or maybe die a little bit after the administration. But getting back on track now, so with foreign policy, I think, for example, I think it stays relatively the same for the most part. outside of Vietnam, which has huge implications, by the way. I mean, for example, we wouldn't see the huge anti-war movement throughout the 60s and 70s. That's huge, for example. What else? I think counterculture potentially would have a lot less influence as well.
Yeah, and like we wouldn't see those hippies, I guess, you know, the peace hippies, because I think that was part of the counterculture to Vietnam in the 70s. Well, yeah,
give peace a chance.
And then we have the college kids protesting. We wouldn't have those, I guess, standoffs and whatnot with police.
That's true.
I think overall, I guess society and would be less turbulent, I guess, per se, because there wouldn't really be this significant amount of anti-war protests and whatnot.
Yeah, we'll definitely touch on other protests later on, especially as we're going to talk into like the future implications of the United States. So let's move on to domestic policy of his. And I think a lot of people here might be a little bit surprised here, but I think the domestic policy would change. I mean, for example, we would see some of the New Deal programs that would be cut out just because of the fact that he's not a big fan of being, or not him himself, but he would definitely be, he was a fiscal conservative in a sense, Robert Taft, being a fiscal conservative who thought the New Deal was actually pretty costly for the most part, or even socialistic to a certain extent. However, there are certain things he would not cut out from at least the federal government. For example, I think you would still potentially see the creation of the Department of Health and Human Services, but you know, of course, as the predecessor being the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, through as Eisenhower made it in 1953 originally. So, and I think Taft would still make it regardless because of the fact is he was known for being more so in line with public aid for education, which he actually changed his policy throughout his time period. And he would also, and by the way, just to add on, if I don't remember if I said this, but Social Security, for example, would be one of the few policies he would actually keep from the New Deal programs. However, I think we should also move on to another big part of the early 50s, McCarthyism. Now, McCarthyism, he was actually against it, as was Eisenhower, but the difference was Eisenhower kept his mouth shut. And Taft most certainly would keep his mouth shut, even more so than Eisenhower potentially would in this scenario, because it's just simply not in his nature. Anything else to add on, Rohan?
Yeah, like you said, Taft knows. He's a brilliant guy. He knows that it's best not to speak out against McCarthy, like Eisenhower also made sure not to speak out, because despite how much like these two men did not like this guy at all, they do know that McCarthy kind of had control of the American public somewhat with his witch hunts and whatnot. So it'd be best for them not to speak out against him and essentially throw away their political careers. So another thing is, like Nick said, he was fiscally conservative, and going elaborating on that, the government would probably be operating under Taft, a more balanced budget per se. The government would make sure that they're not running so much of a deficit or a surplus, making sure they're just spending what they're getting, not borrowing, saving that essentially that debt for, you know, a recession when the government needs to spend that money. And now an important thing to note is, unlike Eisenhower,
I guess you can say that he was neutral. I mean, he would assign whatever came to his table with civil rights. Well, except, you know, for example, enhancing segregation. He was more so just enforcing the ruling by, for example, the Supreme Court. For example, Brown v. Board, which, for example, we saw with the Little Rock Nine in 1957, where he would be, in a sense, helping them integrate into the school for their whole school year.
Yep. So for Taft specifically, though, Taft was a big proponent of civil rights. He wanted to make sure that those rights were passed. So he would actively go out of his way and promote them and make sure that the Civil Rights Act of 1957 and 1960 were passed. And
I think they would still be passed in this scenario regardless.
No, that's what I said. He would make sure that he'd make sure they'd be passed.
I mean, he wouldn't have to make sure. I mean, they would probably be passed regardless. He would just sign them into office.
Yeah. But he'd also make sure that all the Supreme Court acts – he'd also make sure that all the Supreme Court decisions are being enforced, like on Eisenhower, but to a larger extent, essentially. Because Taft, he wanted to make sure that these civil rights would be passed and enforced.
I mean, Taft was a big proponent of civil rights. I mean, he fought against the KKK in Ohio throughout the 1920s and 1930s. He also believed in, for example, an equality of opportunity in a sense. And this is not, for example, equity. That's different. But it was more so equality of opportunity, where you would have the same opportunity, but if you did bad, you did bad, but you had the same opportunity as somebody who did good. He also was for desegregation of the armed forces. He was supporting anti-lynching laws, and he was also against state poll taxes as well. So I think that would be, for example, one thing. And then we also look into a sense that Taft himself, and now this is not a quote, from him, but more so he usually judged his decisions based on the individual, so that be anybody, the community as a whole, industry and labor as well. And I think if you want to apply that logic to nowadays, I think that would be very interesting, because I think you can debate whether or not Republicans really do stand for this. And keep in mind, this is definitely coming from a more right-leaning individual here, because there's definitely some who do not stand for that. I'm not going to name names, not going to call anybody out, but there's definitely some. And so I think also, for example, let's talk about I'm just going to lead on to our last two minor points here. So, for example, we'd still see the passage of the interstate highway system in 1956, for example. And I think that Taft probably viewed this in a sense to be helpful for the people, right? You would agree with that?
Yeah, because I guess it allows, first of all, Eisenhower passed it for defensive purposes, but Taft specifically, he would see also the economic value of kind of connecting the nation together. So now culturally and economically, for the most part, they're intertwined with each other. They need each other, right? And going off that, Taft would probably most likely also be the last protectionist president for a long, long time.
And I think we were kind of thinking that, because I mean, potentially we could see more protectionist Republicans, but do I think the last truly protectionist president would be Taft? I think potentially. I think you kind of made a decent point there, but I think we could potentially see protectionism stay still a core value of the Republican Party as it did before Robert Taft, and then after Robert Taft as well, if you get what I mean. This is referring to trade protectionism, by the way. However, let's talk about the future implications more so for the United States and partially the world. So first, I think one thing we should say is that the United States would definitely change its course, especially with on foreign policy, in a sense. It would definitely still be a country that's tough on communism, for example, but it wouldn't be going into the so-called endless wars. And this would be more so his non-interventionist approach. And I think that non-interventionist approach in the 50s would definitely stir, for example, the future of conservatives, in a sense. And I'm going to be touching on to actually the modern conservative movement, as a matter of fact. And I think we saw this in the 1980s, for example, as Ronald Reagan is highly credited with, for example, bringing a revival to the conservative movement, to the modern conservative movement, in a sense, as did, for example, Barry Goldwater, who was considered to be the founder of that modern conservative movement. So I believe, in a sense, that we would see potentially Robert Taft be recognized as that founder of the modern conservative movement. Now, these conservatives would be pretty interesting. I feel, for example, I think we would see maybe, for example, the neocons, in a sense, would be non-interventionist, and would also be potentially more trade protectionism, be more trade protectionist. And so we would see, for example, that trade protectionism wouldn't be just relegated to, say, the far right or the far left, in a sense, as people seem to think it is nowadays. However, it would probably be more of a mainstream point of view, especially more of a conservative point of view here. What else do you think would happen, Rohan, as a result of this?
Well, like you said, the American public would probably shift more conservative, as it did with the Reagan. And another thing is, going specifically onto trade, we could see potentially that the United States becomes more resistant to free trade agreements such as NAFTA. And it would just be representative of the old guard conservatives, as you were saying. And another thing that you forgot to mention, which I think is important, is that the US would be more hesitant in entering war. And I was just thinking that if the mindset sticks, we would be careful. I don't think we'd bother with nation building, like Afghanistan, for example. After we got the Taliban, we got Osama bin Laden, we would just leave. We wouldn't stick there. We wouldn't try to keep ourselves there trying to build the nation up and getting stuck in an endless war, essentially. So that's a lot I was thinking somewhat. And then another thing is, I think the United States public would also just be more hesitant on government spending. The American public would be more hesitant on government spending, especially in large quantities. So with the LBJ's, War on Poverty, Great Society, I think the American public would just be more hesitant on those type of plans. However,
but I think in a sense that Medicare would be a broadly popular thing. That's more my general idea. Medicare is more of a generally popular idea. Medicaid is where I'm a bit more shaky with the potential for it being able to, or a program similar to Medicaid being passed, in the extent where I think Medicare, for example, would be passed potentially. I'm not saying by our Taft administration, but I'm saying in general, because Medicare is more of a popular policy than Medicaid, of course, in my, from what I know at least.
And now moving on to just implications on the world overall, on the globe. And I think one specific thing would be is the fact with less American intervention now across the world, you know, all nations around the world would be a more pro-American view, and they would just have less antagonism towards the United States. And I think this is really important. And going on, especially into the late 20th century, early 21st century, we see the rise of terror groups across the Middle East that all started with their resentment, especially of one, America's involvement with Israel, which I think that would still happen. But number two, and a big one, was Gulf War.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely right. That's huge. Now, I don't know if we could exactly predict if the Gulf War would be in, because I think it all depends on whether or not we would see like the rise of neocons such as Ronald Reagan, which, I mean, he's kind of like a, I want to say he's a generic neocon. I would say more so a generic neocon would be the Bushes, Bush Senior and Junior, who are both more so, okay, we could intervene in this more, we could intervene in this. But I think if you really want to go into debating which one was right, which one was wrong, or both wrong, or both right, we're not going to touch into that. But what we're saying more so, would this, I feel like maybe potentially we would not see a Gulf War, a lot of these conflicts in the future, mainly because of the fact that we would not see, because we would see a huge non-interventionist turn in terms of approaching the Cold War. Because I think it would still be relatively successful regardless. I don't think there would be any major shifts in terms of Russia becoming a little bit more aggressive from the Taft administration as a result from 1953 to 1961.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big thing overall, because even if, let's say, we do get involved in the Gulf War, we don't have this reputation of just going to places where we don't like and propping up our own governments, right? We don't have this reputation anymore. So the Arab world, and especially those terror groups, like, aren't going to form, or they won't form as much in a big quantity as they did in our timeline. You know, that's what I'm trying to say, essentially.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. I think we could also see, for example, we would also get that a less of a view as a capitalist imperialist pigs, for example. I mean, America is definitely still the hegemony of capitalism, but it wouldn't be viewed as just imperialism. And then that comes into the whole socialism versus capitalism argument here. But otherwise, I think that's it for this episode. I think there's nothing else we could really touch on. But I think
I think we went over that scenario pretty well.
Yeah, but I think overall, though, I think depending on how you see the world, I think this is pretty much a better world in my eyes, at least. I mean, but that's going to be it for this episode. Thank you very much for watching, and I hope you guys really enjoyed it. If you follow our socials at Back to the Past P1 on Instagram and Twitter, again, that's at Back to the Past P1 on Instagram and Twitter, and have a great day.